This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. This is your host, Tim Link, and I'm so glad you're joining us today. We've got our old friend back with another fantastic novel. We're talking about, of course, James Rollins, and the new book's called Trust No One, a thriller indeed. So we're going to talk to James a little bit about the book itself, what makes it fascinating, of course, as part of the Sigma Force series, and how it ties in maybe or stands alone from the other parts of the series. And then, of course, we'll definitely pick his brain a little bit about writing in general, because he is the master of his craft. So we're excited about that. So everybody, hang tight. We'll come back right after this commercial break. You're listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Joining us now is the number one New York Times bestselling author of the Sigma Force series, talking to James Rollins. James, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Tim. I appreciate it. I always love talking to you.
Yeah, thank you. Same here. Same here. Always excited. Always excited to get a copy of anything you've written, the Sigma Force series for sure, and pick your brain a little bit about that and just dive into the whole writing scene in general. But tell us about the latest. It's Trust No One, and it is definitely a thriller.
Yeah, this is a sort of a standalone. Again, it has a lot of the aspects of Sigma Force, a lot of adventure, big roller coaster. But it starts with a ritualistic murder of a professor at the University of Exeter, which is just outside of London. And the cast of suspects is his own students, all of whom, and this is true, there's over at the University of Exeter, there is a degree program in witchcraft and occult that it's not, you know, they're not teaching you how to they'll cast spells. Basically, it's a rigorous program on academic study of history, practices, beliefs.
Right. So if you're a Hogwarts fan, you don't need to go there, or you do need to go there, one of the two.
A little bit of both, probably. But because, you know, this ritualistic murder gets pinned on his students, they're on the run. But prior to the man's death, they were he thrusts this centuries-old alchemist journal onto one of his students, an American that's enrolled in the program. And it's an encrypted diary of an 18th century mystic known as the Count of Saint Germain. This is a real historical figure. He was sort of appeared out of nowhere in France during the time of King Louis XVI's reign, just prior to the French Revolution. He came out of nowhere. He spoke a dozen languages. He was a painter, a violinist, a scientist. He supposedly could remove flaws from diamonds. He composed music. You can find some of the music. It's still in the British Museum. But what's odd about him is that, I mean, contemporaries were, he was sort of like a influencer slash little, hero of his time. You can find him mentioned in the writings of Casanova, Voltaire. Voltaire said, he's a man who does not die and who knows everything. But what's weird is that after the man supposedly died, sightings of him continued. People continue to say, I saw Saint Germain so-and-so. Well, he died a decade ago. Even to today, some people believe that this man was immortal, that he had the secret of immortality. Even in 1972, there was a French public figure, Richard Chanfrey, who appeared on television and claimed he was indeed the immortal count. So again, me as a thriller writer, this is a cool character. Is he a fraud? Is he a charlatan? Is there some truth behind his story? But his diary, his journal that supposedly has the secret of immortality, ends up in this hand of this American student enrolled in this program. And she and her friends are forced to flee. They're pursued by law enforcement. They're hunted by a powerful cabal who actually murdered their teacher. And the race sends them across Europe to uncover the secrets of the book, especially the diary's opening words, which are, "Herein lies the secret to my immortality. Come find me if you dare."
Nice. And I love the fact that, you know, when in writing everything that you do, and this one in particular, is, you know, you have so much going on. You have, you know, key figure, you know, with some intrigue and interest behind it. You have places that we've only dreamed of going, you know, our travels, or maybe have never heard of and have to investigate that. And you wrap that all into something that is really, to me, modern day, you know, sort of like the great search. The, you're looking for the tomb or the chalice or these type of things. And now you've got it all put together in this great investigation piece. So it's very exciting.
I like my novel to be a bit of a travelogue. You know, I want to take my it's escapist fiction. My goal is to entertain you, but also, you know, shed light on pieces of history and weird science, but also take you to locations that you might not be aware of. I don't think I'm going to ruin anything, but there's a key scene takes place in the Tower of London, which is the old prison in London. And I've been there a few times, and a couple things struck me. Number one is, gosh, if I was trapped in here, could I get out? So a part of the story is, can these characters end up being basically trapped in the Tower of London, surrounded by law enforcement, hunted by this cabal? You know, can they break out of the Tower of London and escape their pursuers? So I'm not going to say how they do that, but you know, you have to read the book. But nice. Also, number two, what struck me is the ravens. You know, the Tower of London is notorious for the ravens to occupy the territory. The rumor is basically, if the ravens ever leave the Tower of London, it's the end of Western civilization. So they're, and I learned also about how well ravens can talk. You know, I knew ravens
very
could
smart.
Talk. Being a veterinarian, I knew some, you know, background, and some part of my practice was avian medicine. So I was familiar with the ability of ravens to mimic similar to parrots. But I didn't quite realize how well they were until I was doing my research for this novel. I read a book called The Raven Masters, written by one of the guys that was taking care of the ravens at the Tower of London. Again, cool little tidbits I sort of get to fold into the novel. But also, I went on TikTok and saw a couple of people that had ravens that they're taught to talk. And it's astounding how perfectly they can enunciate and carry accents and mimic sounds, you know, car horns, sirens. So again, just I like shining a light on things that I found pretty incredible that I could put into a novel.
That's right. And for you kids, TikTok is not all about people hurting themselves or little kittens, though they're really, really cute. There's more to it than that. So I love that. You know, and it's funny you mentioned that, because yeah, I've been to the Tower of London too, and spent quite a bit of time in London and some of the surrounding universities, at Cambridge, Oxford, et cetera. And I too, as soon as I went in there, I'm like, this doesn't look like it's hard to escape. But I guess I wasn't surrounded by guards and a different
emote.
Time. Emote. And yeah, back in the day, we didn't have some of the things that we have today. So yeah, perhaps not. So going to the story without giving it away, what are some of the key characters? Do you center around certain student aspects going on? Because it sounds like, you know, like I mentioned, part of the great race, but yet they're trying to pin a murder on someone.
Yeah, well, the main character is that American student named Sharon Carr. She's never been to London before. She's never been outside. She graduated from the University of Omaha. So this is a grand new adventure for her. She feels a little bit of feels out of her element, feels a little bit lost, a little confused. She has a bit of a hard upbringing. So she carries all that baggage with her into town. And all of a sudden, you know, one night she's working late at the library. Her professor, the head of her department, comes rushing at her and shoves this book in her hands and says, you know, don't open it. Don't try to open it. Don't let anybody know you have this. Just flee, run. And the final words he tells to her, of course, is the title of the novel, is Trust No One. And that sends her on the run. She teams up with two of her roommates are on the run with her. One is a Scottish gentleman. He's a mild case of cerebral palsy. So again, I just try to see, you know, can you have a hero that suffers from such an affliction? So I did a lot of research into cerebral palsy and tried to find out how could you do that. And so some of his ailments play a key part in the story. And then one of other roommates is a Welsh woman that is an influencer on Witch Talk. I don't know if you know, we talked about TikTok before, but there's actually something called Witch Talk. It's a subfeed of TikTok where people get together and talk about, again, witchcraft, sometimes from an esoteric standpoint, sometimes from a sort of fantastical aspect. Again, I sort of shadowed Witch Talk for a while just to see what was going on there. And she's sort of an influence on her, and her role of that plays a big role. Sharon Carr's nemesis slash love interest is a named Duncan Maxwell. He's in 16th line to the British crown, a bit pompous ass, but he's also a bit of a savant. And there's aspects of his character that is, as they're on the run, you're peeling back and you find out he's much more complicated than he seems on the surface. So, again, it's just fun trading. He's jamming all these characters from disparate parts of the world and having them try to form this functional unit, try to be Sigma Force before without any type of organization.
Yeah, there you go. And I love that. And I had to pick your brain on that as well, because you're always, it always fascinates me when I read through your books, is the fact that how do you come up with this? You know, for instance, if we're part of it, say Sigma Force or any sort of series, even though it's a standalone book, do you have to keep the theme sort of going, the same type of material and great adventure and these type of things? Then how do you handle the characters? Do you introduce one or two new characters, or is it a whole different type, a whole different group of characters? In this case, we have a lot of different ones.
There's definitely pros and cons on doing a series versus doing a standalone. You know, the series, you can explore a character's life over the course of several books. So you get a sort of larger breadth of their past, their history, their present day, where things are headed. Whereas with a standalone, you're introducing a new set of characters. You've got to get them on the run fast. You've got to sort of establish a relationship between your reader and that character, so that if I dangle them over a cliff, you're going to, you know, I need you to care if they fall. If you don't care if they fall, story ain't working. So, you know, you got to build a lot of, there's a lot of juggling going on to try to introduce a new set of characters, a new threat, and get them all running as quickly as possible. So it is a bit of a juggling act.
Right. And so when you put together the book, Trust No One, did it start off as a topic that you heard about or was interested in, and it sort of built up from there? You built characters around that particular topic, or was it something that, you know, was more of your, you've been sitting on it for a while and thinking, this is fascinating, I need to dig into it at this time?
More of the latter. You know, I've always got my antenna up for that next story idea, because, you know, I've generally been doing two books a year, so I have to come up with these new ideas, and I mean, I've got to be also excited about it. I think readers have a good nose on them. They know when someone's not excited about it, if a writer's not passionate about what he's writing about. I think it comes off on the page. So I always try to find topics that I'm excited about. Oh, I think at this point I have 20 different subscriptions to magazines that I have, from the Smithsonian, Archaeology, New Scientist, Scientific American. And I'm always just reading through them, looking for anything that might become the seed for a story, whether it's a bit of weird science that makes me go, where's that headed? Or maybe a historical mystery, some piece of history that ends in a question mark, something I can maybe solve in the pages of a novel. So for Trust No One, it began with a history. I had a whole little folder on Saint Germain, because I thought, I don't know what I'm going to do with this guy, but he's such a fun character to think about.
Absolutely.
So, you know, how do I build a story around him? So that took a while to figure that out. I like the idea that he was a scientist. So, you know, that gets to the elements of the weird science that I love to explore. The fact that he might be immortal, could there be any truth to that? That's the thing I love to explore. Is there, what's the seed of truth behind a myth? A lot of mythology sounds fantastical, but oftentimes it's based on some type of kernel of truth. So is there some kernel of truth behind these wild stories of Saint Germain? So that's, again, what I start layering this story together. So that becomes the first part. The second part is, what story am I going to tell, and who's going to populate that story? What character is going to carry that forward? But that's for this novel. Every novel, it starts different ways. I wrote a book on Amazonia just because I wanted to write a book about the Amazon. I wanted to have this big jungle adventure. So that's where it started from. Other books were based on characters. You know, I could get an idea for a real cool character, and then I begin to build the story around there. I wish there was a pattern. I wish I could do, say, A, B, and C, and then done. It comes from different directions all the time.
Well, and I love that about how you go about crafting your books. You know, it's all authors do it their own unique way. They have their own way of doing things, especially if they're doing a known for a particular series or a particular type of writing. But everything you do, from what I read, is it's things I would have never thought of. I personally, yes, I've heard of the Amazon, but I never thought of how I could dig into that. I've heard of Saint Germain, but I didn't really know the history behind that. Oftentimes when novels are written, especially if it's a series or someone's known for a particular way of writing, they tend to lean more toward what is going on in the world today instead of looking back years and years and years ago. And that's why I always think how you put together your books is so fantastic.
I mean, I like to do both. I like to explore these historical themes, but also to see how it impacts present day. I've written a book, Crucible, which dealt with artificial intelligence, and they, you know, did a lot of research, talked to different AI scientists. I think mostly because I think a lot of writers work through their own fears to try to, you know, put a nice little bow tie there. I've solved artificial intelligence. Now I can not have to be worried about it. So at the end of every one of my books, there's a what's true, what's not section where I sort of pull back the curtain and let you know what's true in the story, what's fictional, where I got these ideas for the story, if there's any early breadcrumbs. So if you have any interest in the topics I raise, you can follow them. So I think, you know, yes, I want to build a roller coaster of an adventure. I want to keep the heart pumping. I want you reading late into the night. So I'm hoping that when you close that book, that I've left with a little bit of resonance, something to think about, something to explore. But I think one way to do that is to look at the way the past influences the present. You know, there's that old line, if you ignore history, you're likely to repeat it again. You know, there's lessons to be learned from history. And if I can sort of shine a light a bit on that, then all the better. Because heaven knows we have a lot of threats right now, a lot of chaos. And if I can, in my small little corner of the world, you know, maybe offer a little bit of insight, and all the better. While, of course, having a big roller coaster of adventure.
Nice. I love it. I love it. Wrap it all together. And I love what you said earlier about, because I'm a true believer in this too, there's a kernel of truth to everything. You know, how big it gets or how grandiose it grows from there, who knows? But I love the fact that there's a little bit of something because it had to come from somewhere. So I love what you said there. Well, we're going to take a quick break right now. We'll come back and chat a little bit further with number one New York Times bestselling author James Rollins. Talk about the book Trust No One, and I want to dig more into writing styles. I just love that. Of course, I need to pick it from the expert. So everybody hang tight. We'll come back right after this commercial break. You're listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio.
Real people, real stories.
Our little dog developed this lymph problem, but the chemotherapy lasted for 6 months, started developing more lymph nodes. So I thought I'd just try carnivore. The lymph nodes started to go down. Then I took him into the vet to have him checked out, and there was no signs at all inside.
My cat had issues that developed in his eye, and 3 months later, my veterinarian said, let's go ahead and remove the eye. I heard the carnivore on advertising. So I said, you know what? I'm going to order this product. They did the procedure. They did all the tests, and they said, I don't know what you did. This product saved his eye.
I've got a Labrador. He could hardly lift herself up off the floor. The treatment was chemotherapy. That's when I said, this could be the ticket. About 3 weeks, you could tell. She was very alert. She was going on 5 mile walk.
She is just like prime again.
Call 866-836-8735. That's 866-836-8735. Or visit carnivore.com. That's carnivora.com.
Use promo code PETLIFE at checkout for 15% off your order at carnivora.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. In our conversation with New York Times bestselling author James Rollins and his latest book, Trust No One. So you mentioned a little bit earlier about the sort of the goal that you have and some of the things you hope that the readers get from it. I love the fact that, any great thriller or novel is one that you want to stay up late at night and you can't put down, and you definitely accomplished that here. With this particular one, was there any other additional goals or any walkaways that you wanted to accomplish that perhaps is different from some of the things, or maybe perhaps what you always try to do when you put together a great novel?
I've written 18 Sigma Force novels, which are a ensemble cast. So they're big, complicated stories. You're jumping into different perspectives all the time. I wanted to write a much more linear story. I wanted to make it much more fast pace. In this, the chapters are shorter, everything's quicker. We're following this team on the run almost exclusively, get a little peek at the bad guys here and there. But my goal was to see how quickly I can run them through their paces without losing the audience. So that was one of my goals, was to create a lean, mean thriller, something that, versus the more complicated stories I usually write.
Right. And you did a great job with that. You know, and when I read through the book, and my thought pattern was, okay, what's the next adventure? Because I could very easily see, whether it's this cast of characters or a tweak in the type of characters, another great roller coaster ride, you know, that could tie on to this as well, if you chose to do that.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, I always like to leave the story a little open-ended because I think it adds a little bit of feeling like there's still more to go on in these people's lives rather than having a completely bow tie ending where everything's solved and accomplished. And I liked a little bit of mystery left at the end. And of course, that allows me, if I want to write a sequel, I could write a sequel.
There you go. Love it. I love it. So let's talk about you've got the numerous magazine subscriptions. I love how you say that. And you've got these stockpiles of folders of great ideas and stuff. How do you determine what the next thing is? Is it something is like, okay, I'm looking through these again. It's like, yeah, I've been meaning to get to this. Or is it something that someone happens to say at some point? You're like, that triggers that.
A little bit of everything. The most common way is because I collect so many ideas, I have to rein them in because I try to keep them all within just one set of folders I have over here. If they begin to balloon out of that, I will have to dump them out and search through them and go, oh, well, somebody else has already handled that topic, so let's get rid of that. Oh, the science has changed, it's no longer accurate, let's get rid of that. So then what happens though is, as all these bits and pieces, because I don't have any organization to it, they're just crammed together. I wish I was better organized. They're just, some probably at the bottom, there's mice nesting down there.
Nice.
But I like that chaos because what happens is oftentimes is I'll put that, have a spread of bits and pieces on the floor going through them. And all of a sudden I'll pick up two things, this bit of science, this bit of history. And nowhere in my own weird imagination would have ever connected them just out of the blue. But because I'm looking at them both at the same time, I go, hey, I can see how these things connect. And then I'll do some research and go, is there a story there? And oftentimes there's not. Then I can throw them back in the box. But oftentimes what happens is the snowball begins building. I'll find more things that tie together. And there's that excitement that builds. And that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for that story that gets me excited. I want to be passionate about the topic I'm writing about so that it comes up on a page. So it's a bit of serendipity, a bit of magic. Some part of me is secretly fearful that will disappear suddenly. No matter what papers I grasp, the story's not going to come together anywhere. But so far, after 46 books, it's holding together.
Yeah, I think you're holding it together there. That's for sure. And so the research part of it always fascinates me because, everybody has to do research. You can't downplay what the research is because there's going to be some reader out there that's going to catch you on something. But you've got a lot going on. You've got a lot of, not only the characters, but real life characters, characters from the past, locations. You're going to numerous locations. How do you put together that type of research to make sure that A, you're accurate, and B, that it is a fascinating place or person that we're talking about?
Well, first of all, I like researching. It's a great deal of fun to, go down these rabbit holes and see where it leads. Some people ask me, do you have like a team that does the research for you, or do you have somebody you hire to go look for information? I don't. I want to do it myself because what I find oftentimes when I'm down that rabbit hole, I will find that tunnel goes in a different direction. I find something that I would never have thought about in that aspect of the story unless I was doing the research myself. And oftentimes I'm thinking, I need this fact. I'm going to chase that fact. But then I discover something even more exciting en route to that fact. Whereas if I assigned somebody to look that up for me, they would have just come back with the answer. But in trying to find that answer, oftentimes I find something even more incredible, more exciting to write about. But I will allow myself basically 90 days of this I had. When I wrote the very first Sigma Force novel, this was what I learned. I'm only going to allow myself 90 days of research. On the 91st day, I had to begin writing. Because what I found when I was writing Sandstorm, the first book in the Sigma series, was that I was just researching and researching and researching and realizing there's nothing coming out on that page. I'm enjoying my research, but it's not producing a book. So I try to cram all my big research locations, characters, science, and history in those 90 days, whether it's online research, calling people up, calling scientists. I love to call a scientist. By the way, scientists will tell you anything if you show interest in their topic because their wives and their husbands no longer want to hear about that. So if they have an avid audience, they will tell you anything and everything. But I love to also ask scientists, don't tell me what you're going to write in your next journal article, this book you're working on. Look over your shoulder and tell me what's on your lab table right now. I need that immediacy. I want that current because it takes me a while to write a book. And so science changes very rapidly. If I don't get that sense of current, really cutting edge element of the science, it might be too old or wrong by the time my book comes out. So I do all that 90 days of research initially. But of course, every single day, every single page, You know, I got to go on Google Earth and, you know, where's the Starbucks in this city that, you know, if I'm going to say they're going to Starbucks, I better get the location right. Because if I get it wrong, there's going to be a one-star Amazon review saying he doesn't know where Starbucks is in Cincinnati.
That's it.
You got to get those details right.
That's it.
Which is powerful, but it's powerful also because I like, if you get the telling details correct, then people will believe anything after that fact. Like I said, if I tell you where the Starbucks is in Kuala Lumpur, and you've ever been to Kuala Lumpur and go, oh my gosh, really, this is a Starbucks at the intersection. When I tell you that there's telepathic marsupial creatures that live underneath Antarctica, you go, probably it is, because you got the Starbucks location correct. So if you get enough telling details, you can carry the reader to some pretty fantastical spaces.
That's right. So get your Starbucks correct and everything else is easy breezy. Not a problem. They'll believe anything you say. I love that. I don't know if that's a good way to go in life, but yes, I love that. No one, I go to Starbucks every day. So there you go. So I love that aspect of it. And I don't know how you do. I applaud you for tying it down into 90 days. To me, just trying to track, even if you don't go to the places, even if you've been there and done that, just if you went online to dig up information, went to your local library, called your scientists up, how you can just set down to 90 days is amazing to me.
Well, you do make a good point. And I always stress this to writers out there. You really don't have to travel to the places that you write about. I've only probably been to maybe 70% of the places I write about. The other 30%, I've never set foot in them. I mentioned Sandstorm, the first book in the Sigma Force series, takes place in the country of Oman. Never been. But what I like to do, again, part of my research is I will try to find boots on the ground. I will try to find somebody local that will somebody to tell me about their place, tell me things that I'm not going to find from doing a Wikipedia search or doing a Google Earth search. I like in these little weird details that people will tell me. So when I was writing Sandstorm, I found a gentleman that was selling Omani products online at a local souk in Oman. So I contacted him by email and said, hey, you know, I'm writing a book on Oman. I'd like to be able to test by, you know, I could do some research, but can I give you what I'm writing and make sure it's accurate? Do you know any things, you know, that might be cool that I could add to the book? So I found like little details that I couldn't find anywhere else. Like the Sultan of Oman was trained in Britain. That's where he was educated. And so every day at noon on every radio station, he requires that you play classical music. So I would never found that out unless I was talking to this guy online. So I just found that fascinating, this little tidbit to throw in there that at noon, every radio station is classical music because that's what the Sultanate likes. That's what he gets.
That's what
I also found out that one of the largest purchasers of Christmas trees in the Middle East is in the country of Oman. So just little details like that I would have just never found online. You just have to sometimes just find those boots on the ground, people that are willing to talk to you. So when I wrote Sandstorm, you know, I get a lot of these oil executives. I was in Oman and this year, what years were you in Oman? Because you clearly have been here. Nope, never been.
Right. Fascinating.
You don't have to travel to these countries. You don't figure, oh, I don't have the budget to travel to Paris to write about an adventure in Paris. You don't have to.
Right. Yeah. Unless your editor is willing to pay for that, then maybe.
Very true.
Then we could do that.
Take advantage of that.
For sure. And the Christmas tree thing sounds like a great Jeopardy question. So I'm looking forward to seeing that one.
Bar trivia.
That's it. Well, everybody go out and pick up a copy of the book. Everything James Rollins does, pick up the whole everything. Just find all of them you do. But this one in particular is very, very exciting. It's unique. It takes you to places that you've only thought you'd want to go and places you've always dreamed of going. And it's a great thriller. Of course, the book's called Trust No One by James Rollins. James, where can people find out more about you, the book, what's going on, tours, places, online events, all that good stuff?
Sure. Well, the Encyclopedia of James Rollins is my website, you know, jamesrollins.com. I'm not that imaginative of a title, but that's what it is. But if you want to know the day in, day out of what's going on in my life, you know, what's going on with my dogs, what's going on with life in general, you know, how much snowfall we're having up here in Tahoe, you know, follow me on social media. I'm on both, you know, Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and Blue Sky. Pretty much find me anywhere.
There you go. Everybody befriend him on all those, tracking, tracing, whatever the latest terminology are, is going on in just social media. But definitely go pick up a copy of the book. And if you get a chance to meet James in person, you're going to be thrilled to death about that. And of course, the latest book is called Trust No One. Definitely a thriller by New York Times, number one New York Times bestselling author, James Rollins. James, great to see you again. Great to talk to you again. And look forward to chatting with you some more down the road.
All right. Please do. I look forward to it, Tim. Thanks.
All right. Well, we're coming to the end of the show today. I want to thank everyone for listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. I want to thank the producers and sponsors for making this show possible. If you have any questions, comments, ideas, or people you want to hear from or listen to on the show, drop us a line. You can drop us a line at PetLifeRadio.com, and we'll be glad to answer your questions, entertain your comments, and bring on the people you want to hear from most. And while you're there, check out all the other wonderful, great shows. It is a howling good time at PetLifeRadio.com. So until next time, write a great story about the animals in your life, and who knows, you may be the next guest on Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Have a great day.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.